This is Robert Stark. I'm joined here with Shinja. She is an anime artist and lives in Italy. Shinja, it's great talking to you.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
And I'm also joined here with my co-host, Pilliter.
Hi, Shinja. It's nice to be on.
Hi.
Shinja, can you talk about your background as an artist? How long have you been doing work? And how did you get into anime?
As my mother used to say, I learned first to draw and then how to write. So the drawing media has always been my favorite meaning of communication with people, you can say. Despite that, I made different choices for my studies, but my art has always been the core of my life. And 7 years ago, I decided that my art deserved the first place in my life, and I made the choice to make it my job, my first income. And my encounter with anime was 20-some years ago in my high school through the Ranma Alpha manga by Rumiko Takahashi. And since then was deep love with Japan and its culture, as we have already talked about with Pilliter.
That's funny. Didn't Takahashi, I think, did the Roses, I think it was? That name sounds very familiar. No, that's Rama, right? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
That's Rama.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Rama. Yeah.
Rama and, that one with the girl with the blue hair and the leopard.
Lamu.
Okay, that's it. That's right.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of another shoujo that's really the Roses of
Versailles.
Yes, yes. I remember
seeing it. Here in Italy, we call it Lady Oscar because we like to shuffle the titles every time.
That was one of the first like cross-dressing like
shoujos. Yeah, it was awesome.
That was before Padaliro. I thought Padaliro was the original one.
That too. I think actually Mineo Maya was influenced by Lady Oscar. He cites it as an influence. It's a very older, since it's like post Tezuka. It's in between 60-70, and Padaleo would be more of the, I think Padaleo would be more of the open yaoi, right? Yaoi wasn't like,
yeah.
It's kind of soft, so, Lady Oscar.
Lady Oscar was epic. It's from 1972, the first edition of Lady Oscar. Was looking on Wikipedia. It's pretty, I think it's older than Patalir.
Yes.
Mm-mm. It was awesome. Here in Italy, that a really huge success, Lady Oscar or Rose of Versailles. But I think that the majority of the people didn't get immediately the cross-dressing subject implicit in it, but it was really it's an anime that you should review once an adult to fully understand it.
It's I always get the last names mixed up. I always feel that there's another guy I really love, Inoue. He did Slam Dunk and Real and Vagabond.
Yeah,
I love him a lot. When I was in New York City at this one Japanese bookstore, Inoue did a Vagabond memorial there. And his art, you could feel and see and sense his Musashi, I think it was, the character that he drawed. And there in New York City, it's amazing that once you see his art in front of you, it becomes almost real and very embracive, and how talented Inoue is at his art. And it seems to me that there are a lot of manga artists, you could say most of them are mediocre simply because the criticism is they draw the same style over and over again. But
yeah,
Inoue has, he really perfected the human form, especially in Vagabond and Real, which he does now. And I'm still a fan, and I love Inoue, and whenever a new issue of Real comes out, I have to read the line.
I'm not really familiar with his work per se, but I have noticed with anime, Like, some of them are more cartoonish. There's a handful of them that are more realistic, like the ones we've talked about.
Yeah,
Padaliro is more like
cartoony, esoteric. Yeah,
cartoony, esoteric.
Mayo is, it's his own style, like this weird 2D Egyptian Art Nouvelle, Beardsley kind of style that's uniquely his own. Compared to if you were to look at a random shoujo today and just pick it out of the bookstore, it looks like it's everyone's following a formula compared to, I know, Takahashi, you know, if you look at Rama and some of her, she does have a very, you know, it's her, maybe it's the eyes. I noticed that the eyes.
I don't know why, but you can always recognize her characters. There's something unique. Even if it's not, you can say, a really crafted style, or also respectful of the anatomy, because it's pretty mangish, her style too. But you can always recognize her work.
I know you're influenced by the Japanese manga artist.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on the sort of influence by the Japanese artist of the European Art Nouveau style? You said you see that a lot in especially Padaliro, but also the poem and the Wind in the Trees. Are you a fan of those Art Nouveau artists like Alphonse Mucha?
I can appreciate the work, but it's not my cup of tea. I don't know why. I'm pretty much a fan of the old style anime school, just like Rumiko Takahashi and all the variation on the theme. The most recent style, I cannot find the same connection with those kind of art, because sometimes they are more, they can be more creative, just like the style you have talk about. But there's something, I don't know how to explain it. They look just too much studied, too much engineered in their aspect. I like the freshness and the spontaneity of the old school style of manga and anime creators.
Besides manga and anime, which artist influenced you the most, including European artists as well?
Above all, Caravaggio.
Oh, yeah, he was like an Italian Renaissance painter.
Yeah.
But I looked up his work. Someone did a thing of one of his paintings, but they put on like a Hello Kitty panties on one of the women. You've seen that?
Yeah, I've seen it. He was crazy, as a crazy person who killed someone in a fight. But I just love how he painted the shadows. He made the shadows the first subject, the protagonist of each and every painting he made. And I was so lucky that some years ago, 10 years ago, I had the chance to go to an exhibit when there was there were exhibited some of the most famous of his paintings. I was about to have a Stendhal syndrome attack. They are huge and marvelous, and there's something you need to see with your eyes in reality.
Your work also reminds me of the artist Trevor Brown. Are you a fan of his work?
I'm now, because I had seen some of his work a time ago, but unfortunately I could not remember his name, so I kind of lost track of his work. But now, thanks to P. Litter, that also made that reference, I'm trying to find the word. I'm on time. I'm on schedule on his work now, and I'm binge watching everything I can find about him now. And I have already found my favorite work of the 2015. That's the I Nazi girl that shot a selfie of herself in a bathroom. And
I see that. I see that
genius.
One.
I love this one.
I first found about Trevor Brown. I'm a huge fan of Juxtapose magazine, which is a lowbrow art magazine in the West Coast America scene. I loved it. I was subscribed to that when I was 14 up till I was 16. And I think his art was shown right next to another artist named Dave Cooper. And Dave Cooper, he's an art director now for the Nickelodeon cartoon show Pig, Goat, Banana, Cricket. However, Trevor Brown was much more on the radical side, as he was featured in Apocalypse Culture and some issues of Jim Goad's Answer Me, and he definitely has a very edgy style to it. He did, but he's mostly associated with the band White House, and as well did an album cover for Venetian Snares. His art is fun.
Was this the original White House back in the 80s?
Yeah. Yes. Well, he did the cover, I think it was 93, 95. I actually have one t-shirt.
Most of his most prominent work is from the 90s.
Yeah, yeah. I have that one 93 t-shirt of, like, that Japanese girl just holding the microphone thing. It says White House. That's a really cool one. But the most famous one is, I think it's Just Like a Cunt. She's in the water and she has mouths in her. It's very iconic. Because White House is a super offensive shock art band, and somehow along the way, Trevor Brown got associated with the whole Peter Sotost, child porn Nazi, whatever, just shock for shock's sake. And yet, at the same time, however, I think this guy is super sensitive. I mean, his wife is Japanese, he lives in Japan, most of his market is, he probably knows Japanese, and so even though he probably came from that punk rock culture back then, he still, I think he does have a calm aesthetic to him. I mean, he's probably a private person, and he's probably a nice guy, and he has a lot to say about Japanese culture. But he definitely knows how to draw the Japanese figure.
Sure.
And his, I'm looking at some of them, like, it's a lot of shock art, like, draw illustrations of young girls, and there's, like, Nazi imagery. A lot of and sort of the hentai controversial themes, but it also has a very kind of surreal aesthetic to it. I even see a little bit of influence from like a Hieronymus Bosch and the surreal artist like a Dolly. Mm-hmm. And he's also fascinated with like a lot of them with Alice in Wonderland. And I was wondering if like the Tim Burton film came out like. His aesthetic of that recent Tim Burton film looks like a Trevor Brown work.
I never thought about that, but you're right. There's a resemblance.
I mean, which Tim Burton film you're talking about?
His recent Alice in Wonderland, and I didn't even see it, but just I've seen kind of the imagery from it, and it looks as if he got the kind of inspiration.
Yeah, I mean, Brown is certainly an interesting figure. He probably thinks of things about putting. I mean, the object, when you're an artist, especially in fine art, you tend to think of things as objects, and like Francis Bacon, where you have his famous piece with the three monsters and the orange background. I think of Trevor Brown, he's almost teasing the audience, or at least we're observing his stuff, and they come from these surreal things where objects are in your mouth, and it's this way, a feeling he's trying to gravitate. I don't think it necessarily means he's into pedophilia or something like that.
I think
he loves Japanese culture a lot, and he probably associates himself with Japan.
I think he also loves a lot humans and the body. I see this through his deconstruction of the human body when he made pieces like what's the name? Anatomically Incorrect. Where you can see different parts of a body, there's intestines and eyeballs and brain. It can look pretty horrifying, if you will. But there's such a... It's so precise. There's a... I don't know. A respectful way to draw the human body, even if deconstructed, there's a care, and you don't put that much care in something you don't respect. I don't know if I'm clear about what I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, if you're an artist, I know what you're saying, because like in pornography, someone does something maybe quote-unquote degenerate just to make a quick buck. But if you're an artist, and you can obviously tell by his work, he puts a lot of work and passion into his art.
Definitely.
We discovered you through Prince of Queens, who's a YouTuber who we've had on our show. Can you talk about your work you've done for the Prince of Queen, the anime you've done for him, and how you met him?
I found him, I stumbled upon his channel while I was looking for further information about the presidential election and all the social justice warriors rumble you are having in your country. And I was immediately fascinated by his style, his voice, and the way he crafts his content. I find him really entertaining and enriching. Every time I listen to him, I watch his video, I find I learn something. I just really enjoy his channel. And 1 month ago, he said that after all of the controversy about the Bering channel that was striked because Bering was using copyrighted images from a channel, a cartoon channel from Australia, if I'm not mistaken, he made a shout out. He requested to the fan of this channel to try to draw some fan art in order to replace his original image that was inspired by the Chucky doll. And he was rightfully so scared to be striked by if he was continuing to use that copyright image.
Chucky doll that Prince of Queen uses, that's not from the original film.
That was Glenn, I think. It was from Seeds of Chucky, which is the son of Chucky and his
wife. I thought you were saying there was an illustrator who did that because I thought it was from that. It is from the film.
Yeah. Use a screenshot.
Yeah.
pretty much. He made a little list of the characteristics, the features that the fan art must have. And I tried to draw my version of Prince of Queens. And my version was with the beard, with the crown, with the eyeglasses. And my little touch, my Shinja touch, was adding a background poker card with the queen seeds on the corner to state that he's the Prince of Queens. And he enjoyed it, he used it. I made a series of six images to make just kind of a little progressive animation to help him construct his videos. Nowadays he's using somebody else's fan art, but I can understand why, because they are really pretty amazing work too.
Pillar, do you want to ask about Candy?
Oh, well, I think it's funny because I know Candy is very popular in Italy from what I read from a book. I think it was by Fred Choate called Manga.
Yeah.
And from what I learned from Mr. Choate was that Candy had an influence on Italy, thinking that there were some Italian cultural interest in it or something. It's like as if Cowboy Bebop is huge in America, but...
Yeah, pretty much.
They don't care about in Japan. It's like, who cares? But in Italy, there are some animes which are big, kind of like, I'm thinking of like Captain Harlock or Candy. Are there like Italian exclusive animes that are just known in the country, but nobody cares outside? Like, I think there's a thing called Ashita Knight. Do you remember that? It's like this girl with blonde hair, this rock star with like a red streak of hair in his head.
I can't remember.
It was called Ashita Knight, and it was in Italy. I think it was called Kiss Me Lucia.
Oh my god! Yeah, Kiss Me Licia. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
Oh, that was terrifying. We have the live action.
Yes, there was a live action, and I saw that. It's all in Italian. I'm thinking, it must have some cultural interest with an Italian people then, because it's not known where other outside else.
From that live action, the protagonist, the female protagonist, Licia, has become one huge star of for everyone who loves anime. And she's Cristina D'Avena is her name. She's an Italian singer. She has made her career about singing pretty much the majority of the cartoon and anime song here in Italy. She's pretty huge. She makes concerts in Comic-Con here in Italy.
Are you a fan of the 80s Italian illustrations? I just sent you a link to them if you can look at them really quick.
Oh, okay. Let me see.
Interesting.
Because damn slow computer.
I guess just Google 80s Italian illustrations into a Google image search.
Okay. Oh wow, there's a lot of fashion here in this search. Okay. I'm not really familiar with a lot of the things I'm seeing. Maybe I was too young.
Some of them, I think most of them are for fashion, but
yeah.
There's also the illustrations for like the Italo disco artist for their album covers.
Yeah,
when I think of Italo disco, I think it's Memory Records, and I'm thinking of the Eurobeat records like Delta Dance and Time Records, and I don't know. It's Italo disco is very interesting, and that's another thing that has its own subject on. But when I'm thinking of art on Italo disco, it's usually they always make up one pen name. The song, what it's called, and I remember there was this. I'm thinking of like really funny Italo disco records, like Brian Ice Talking to the Night, and I think that was called.
I think the only for like the American audience, I think the only Italo disco song that they've heard of is probably like Tarzan Boy by Delta Mora. But other than that, most Americans haven't heard that much about it.
Ken Laszlo. That was another one. Tonight. There's something. Ken Laszlo.
Geeky,
you know. I'm just looking at... those are all on Memory... Babies Gang. That's right. They're all, like, on, like... these are all on Memory Records, and...
And then there's Chatelet.
Yeah.
Which has online following, because Chatelet was this original Italo disco song from, like, the mid-80s. But there's this whole, like, online meme, I'm sure you're familiar with it, like Pepe the Frog. And the band is actually called Pepe, and the album cover says Pepe. It has a frog, actual frog on it from the 80s, so it's become this big, now this big online sensation, this original Italo disco song from the 80s.
I didn't know that.
Me neither, and I thought it was made today. And it actually was just...
You've heard that. Yeah, you've heard that song. So the lyrics... Our lyrics are in Italian, but there's English translations of it.
It's called P-E-P-E and Chalidae, and it's like there's a frog on it. It's just such a big coincidence.
P-E-P-E. I want to see the lyrics, because they are in Italian, but I am not familiar with...
I found the lyrics. I found the lyrics. I'll send it to...
Thanks a lot.
Sent the lyrics to Shinja.
Oh my god. Okay. I'm having a great time reading the lyrics, because there are a lot of big words. Pretty fantastic. Yeah.
What's it about?
I will surely listen to it.
It's like a dance song, and it just goes...
That's the funny thing, because it's a dance song with a pretty poetic lyric. It's a kind of strange combination.
Interesting. That is... hold on. Yes.
I think we have lost Robert. Yeah.
There was Robert there?
The power of esoteric tech hacked into Robert Stark's computer. Meanwhile, he was able to get back on.
So, what happened, Pilliter, is when I clicked on that video, it crashed my computer, so I had to restart. Were you...
We noticed you were gone, and we thought Pepe destroyed your computer.
Yeah. Shinja, did you listen to the song while I was gone?
Yeah, I was enjoying it.
So, Shinja, did you get a chance to listen to that song, Shadowlay?
Yeah, I was listening to it, and it's pretty funny. Is also a lot nostalgic in the sounds. It's pretty much an 80s, really 80s Italian sound. I didn't know it, but I'm really happy to have discovered this song today. I'm also enjoying the lyrics because they are surreal.
They're very esoteric, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't understand Italian, but I've read the English translations. They're like cosmic realities.
Yeah. The translation is pretty spot on. And so
it's the power
in Italian. There's another sound to it, but the translation is right.
I was saying it's the power of Keck coming through.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
I do want to get your thoughts on Italian politics. We interviewed the Prince of Queens, and he has this kind of loosely affiliated movement called the Alt-Left, but I know there is this big political party in Italy called the Five Star Movement, and I was looking over their political ideology, and it does remind me a lot of the alt-left. Are you a supporter of the five-star movement?
I used to be. In the first... when they first came out. Maybe because the stand-up comedian that Beppe Grillo, exactly, is a pretty famous stand-up comedian here in Italy. And I used to be a fan of his works. And when he started this Movimento Cinque Stelle, that is a five-star movement, a lot of people were enthusiastic about it because it was the first time that a movement since the 70s, and then there was a movement made by the people for the people. I don't know. Right now, I'm pretty much confused about them because they look like they switch around their position. They are not so unified in their form.
It's kind of like a big tent, a political different political anti-establishment groups.
Yeah, you should know that they first. Big event, public event, was called the Vaffanculo Day, the Fuck You Day. They organized this big event and the Fuck You was for the establishment, for the government. And lots of people went there in Rome, if I'm not wrong. They are pretty much, how can I say... controversial in some aspects. I like the fact that to become a member of this party, you don't have to be a typical politician. You can be a normal person today and become one of their representatives tomorrow. It's really open to everyone. I think they should find a way to... organize better themselves because they are pretty much going into a random way, too much freedom of choice in the party is creating pretty much splits, confusions, change of ideas. They are a little bit weakened right now, also because the politics in Italy are pretty much a mess.
That's kind of the dilemma with politics. If you have a group with a very rigid set of beliefs, then you narrow your audience. But if you have like a big tent movement, then you appeal to more people. But that also leads to infighting. And we see that a lot with these different political groups we talk about in this country as well.
Exactly. Too much choice or too less choice. There's no right way to do it, especially in Italy. The politics here in Italy are pretty much kind of fashion. This year is fashionable to have the 5-star affiliation. Next year will be the Democratic Party affiliation. There's no more politics identity here in Italy.
Is political correctness strong in Italy like it is in the United States and countries like England and Germany?
Well, we have the Pope.
Oh, yeah.
So anything can be political correct.
I think he's from Argentina, but he's of Italian descent.
Yeah. He's from near Turin, if I'm not mistaken. But he has
From Turin. He was born. He's from Buenos Aires, Argentina, but his ancestry is Italian.
Yeah, from Turin. That's what I was meaning. From North Italy. I have my beef with the Pope and the Church, but that's another subject. The PC culture here in Italy is kind of entrenched in our culture because we are pretty much people that enjoy the hypocrisy, because being a Catholic nation, everyone goes to the church on Sundays, everyone goes to the mass, but we have a really high rate of prostitution and drug dealing and lots of other shit. You can say lots of people profess themselves as good Catholics, but does not live up to their words.
Are you a supporter of a Casa Pound?
No, I couldn't say, because they are another group of people that change their mind in order to survive. There's no pretty much a stable point of view. They used to be. They used to be more appealing to me.
I was thinking of Casa Pounds. There's mm-hmm. this famous thing when you walk in their room or their house, they have all these names of their celebrities they really like. You know, they might have Ezra Pound or someone else, or like they recently had on Captain Harlock. And I think there was an Italian documentary when asking, why do you admire Captain Harlock? Because he's a fascist, he's an anarcho-fascist that steals from the rich and gives to the poor.
Oh, that's what
That's what you were thinking about, Captain Harlock, is there? That's an interesting connection, though, because it shows you that... And there's merchandise on the Casa Pound website and radio where they show Harlock in, like, this black and white stencil, like, street punk uniform, which I think is... It's very appealing.
Oh, really?
I think it's on the Casa Pound website. They have some Captain Harlock. It says, join Casa Pound or something. And it's like, you want to join so you can be a space pirate, you know?
My observation with, like, Italian and European politics is there's more political kind of fusionism. In America, there's been this notion that you're either a liberal Democrat who's politically correct and supports open borders and all that SJW stuff, or you're, like, this Republican who watches Fox News and who's a warmonger and wants to destroy the environment. But I think things are starting to change. People are, and I think, like, younger people are more open to new ideas. But I do notice the more trends of, like, political fusionism in European politics.
Yeah, it's more political confusion because there are too many parties right now, especially in Italy. Because there's no they are not able to find a cohesion. Every time there's something there they are not in accord about, they just split and create another party. You can go to the poll to vote and find yourself with a ticket with about 20 party, and half of them are never made to the news because somebody decided to found one.
Is the Forza Nuevo a major party?
Forza Nuova, yeah, pretty big party. The major party right now is the Democratic Party.
What are your thoughts on Forza Nuevo and Roberto Fiore?
Roberto? Sorry, go again. I didn't.
What are your thoughts? Are you a supporter of Forza Nuevo?
I can say I'm a supporter because lots of time they have been associated with the fascist movement. And here in Italy, the fascist and Mussolini kind of thing is pretty much an open wound, just like the Nazis for the Germans. Mm. So even if there are maybe some aspects I could find in accord with them, I can't say I'm a supporter. Right now, I can't say I'm a supporter of anybody in the politics system of Italy. Also because they tend to make alliances. Monday, the left with the right. Tuesday, the center with the left. They are changing too much, too soon, too fast. There's no way to find your politics identity.
Right now, Italy has been hit pretty hard by the migrant crisis. I would say probably more than... currently, Italy is the main destination of new arrivals from...
We are the Mediterranean gate.
What have been some of your observations of the migrant crisis from your own personal perspective?
The migrant crisis is going on from 20 years, to be honest. Because it started...
Yeah, but it's accelerated like the last couple.
Right.
Of years.
Yeah, in the last 2-3 years, is become a tragedy. Not only because for those poor people, because they are also migrants, but there are lots of poor people that are escaping from war, from misery. But the Italian government and the European Union are. Pretty much incapable of organizing that. We have been, quote-unquote, invaded by migrants with riots in the center where they have been hosted. There's been a lot of confusion. In my vision, it's not a good way to organize these things. I don't think we are in the same line of danger as Germany, because there the problem is pretty much rampant. But we have already tasted the problem in first person because we had a crime raised too.
What part of Italy are you in, or would you rather not disclose that?
I'm North Italy, near Milan.
Northern Italy. Seems to be in the United States, like most Italian Americans trace their ancestry to Sicily.
I have no difficulty on believing that.
Are there kind of like regional rivalries between northern and southern Italy?
Oh, you bet there are. Italy is not a united country, despite we have a unique name. We are not united. The north looks down to the south. The south cries between the victim status. The center is swing up and down depending on the situation. Everybody hates Rome and the government. Pretty much a mess. I think it's also because I think that's pretty much at the same time beautiful and horrifying about my country. We have so much cultural diversity in our country.
Yeah, this long history of different invasions and different cultural influences. Like Northern Italy has a more like a, has like a Germanic influence to a degree.
Yeah.
And I know Sicily also has a kind of, they were colonized by the Arabs, so there is a little
bit of
influence.
Yeah, you can see the difference still now.
On your previous podcast, you talked about the Chinese people in Italy. Can you talk about that?
the Chinese, I can tell by giggling about, because I find them so damn smart. They have been the first foreigners to came here in Italy in great numbers. We found ourselves surrounded by Chinese people in pretty much a really short time. But the main difference between the Chinese arrival and the other cultures arrival in Italy is that the Chinese arrival has been silent, kind of like ninjas, because they've come here and tried to integrate in the Italian system in their own special way. But it's really, really, really rare to hear from an Italian that the Chinese are a problem. There's the only problem, real problem with the Chinese is that their way to conduct their business is pretty much killing a great deal of Italian businesses because they are smart.
With the migrant crisis from Africa and the Middle East, that's a big problem with the crime and terrorism. People coming in from China, they're, for the most part, those people coming in, they're law-abiding and they're not going to cause problems.
Absolutely not.
Like, yeah, but if at the same time, if like 50 million Chinese people came into Italy, it wouldn't be Italy anymore. It would change the country.
Absolutely. No, no.
I think it was Greg Johnson who said, like, the Chinese will preserve, like, a Western civilization in, like, a wax museum.
Yeah.
You remember you said that?
The postmodern – I always say that. It's the postmodern wax museum ideal where I think Richard Lynn said this too at an American Renaissance conference in 2011, saying that if Western civilization does not preserve, you know, white people in the future, then it's obviously going to be China's duty to preserve the world. However, China could care less because they only want China to exist and everybody outside is just owned. Like, China will be everybody else's landlord. Every single Chinese person exists in a country. They operate business in there, but don't care about the self-determination of any of those countries and all have loyalty back to China. So they'll preserve everything like a wax museum with a pulse. And so there's this folly among Western people that believe if Chinese people are going to rule the world, then obviously they're going to have Chinese values across the world. Not exactly. It's more like they won't care. They'll just, everything will be in a wax museum on display, and there'll just be more chaos. And so it really is a unique thing that Western people should fight back and have some preservation. Otherwise, things are going to be much more chaotic, dystopian, and like Blade Runner in the future.
And Pillator, your concept of like Asian Aryanism, you say that you need Europeans and Asians. Would you say, but let's say you have these places, there's cities in Southern California like Monterey Park in the San Gabriel Valley region, parts of the Silicon Valley like Cupertino and Vancouver, Canada. And like, I view those places more as like, they're like Chinese colonies, but I don't really view that as like Asian Aryanism as Pillator would advocate.
I had a Chinese girlfriend that told me what's great about Chinese people is that if you were thinking in a random country, let's say Iraq or Iran, there's at least one Chinese colony there doing business and being very secret, like Jews in such a way. And so if Chinese exist in every country, they don't assimilate with the people and create this Chinese-French mix. No, there's just isolated Chinese people there, kind of like spies, and then having loyalties back to motherland China. And so that's what's happening. There's Chinese colonies in California and here in Philadelphia. Obviously, there's a Chinatown. It's just all Chinese.
The other thing that's ironic about that with Chinese in Italy is in the United States, Chinatowns are always next to Little Italy. San Francisco recently, like, we have North Beach, which is the traditional Italian community. And then it's right next to Chinatown, and Chinatown is, like, gradually kind of creeping into Little Italy, but there's still a lot of Italian restaurants, and a lot of them are still run by Italian immigrants if you go to San Francisco.
Mm-hmm. Like, I know what you're, like, here's the thing. If there's a Little Italy right next to, like,
China. That's true in Philadelphia. I know it's true in New York. Is that in Philadelphia as
well? Yeah, there's the famous cheesesteak places, Pat's and Gino's. The famous Reading Terminal Markets. Everything's there. The Liberty Bell. There is that pan. Little Poland, right? I recently went to Little Poland to do business, and it's all Polish people from Poland that don't speak English, but they fly American flags and say they're American, yet that's really suspicious, right? They don't know.
But that's strange.
It is. It's funny. I don't know how the Polish got in. It's like there's a Little Poland center in Philadelphia. It's really cool, but For the Chinatown part, it is definitely a gated community, and it's like this, they have their own wall of China around Chinatown, and once you enter it, you're in a little Chinese borough. The funny part is, if it is right next to the Terminal Market or the Trocadero Street, the thing is, whites will collide with them, and so let's say you have Chinese girls that are more Americanized, and they just don't like their parents, then obviously those white males who can't stand their white feminist punk tattoo piercing women that don't want to be mothers, they'll just gravitate towards these Chinese women and then create this pan-white Asian thing that's happening where the term is whitewashed, where they're trying to whitewash Chinese and therefore, like, white on the inside. No, they're white on the inside, but they're Chinese on the outside. At the same time, however, they do only have traditions of Chinese if they belong in that race, but they show this new tradition, what Robert's talking about, what I call this Asian-Aryan thing. They'll disagree. Mm-hmm. It sounds kind of radical, right, Asian-Aryan, but it's the only way to determine that if white genocide is happening and it's real, then obviously all these white men that are falling for the multicultural game will all pick up these Chinese women and have half offsprings, half white, half Chinese offsprings, and then they're just going to uphold this Western civilization thing through being Hapas, and so Asian Aryanism would put them on track, and it's kind of like this Plan B thing. But I think it's more.
Oh, happening. Yeah, because you get all these, like, right wing trolls, like, accusing you of, like, trying to, like, destroy the white race, but you're just saying, like, it's like Plan B.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, I don't advocate racial mixing or the abolishment of the white race. I'm not I can't even pronounce his name. But the thing is, if there's no white people, there's not going to be half white, half Asian people. There's just going to be Chinese people, right? And if there's no Chinese people, there's just going to be white people and less of the Chinese. You have to have a mom and dad in order to have a son. And if you have both healthy sides, then it's going to happen. Now, let's just say, like, a science fiction scenario. Let's say there's less white people. And let's say there's more of these, like, half white, half Asian people. And obviously, you know, they're going to be either going on their Asian side, or they're going to have to redefine being European or white through this, I call it, Asian-Aryan identity. So you have to preserve that white back. You have to preserve both races. And in no way I'm saying abolish either side, especially, you know, I'm an advocate for European interests, so.
Me too. Here in Italy, you can you don't see lots of Italian and Chinese couples. There's no mixing with Chinese.
I interviewed a while back when I was on Voice of Reason this a nationalist political activist from Denmark, Daniel Carlson, and I asked him about the dynamics with like mixing between groups. And he said the most common thing is men from Denmark bringing back wives from Asia, and he saw it as a bad thing. But maybe Italy is a different.
In Italy, it's more common to see an Italian woman married to an African descent man.
Ah, like the
lots of converted to Islam.
Yeah, that's a really strange thing. Like in America, it's true, the highest divorce rate in America is black male, white female. It barely, and there's a lot of, but the thing is, the most stable, only multicultural thing, every major city in America, California, New York, it's white male, Asian female. Like, that is the only, like, I feel like I have another theory that white people in America only want multiculturalism just for the Asian women and their Japanese anime culture and their food. And I'm getting very suspicious on that. I'm thinking, you see less and less of white male, black female, white male, Hispanic female, whatever non-white female. It always is Asian female. And it's getting very suspicious to a point where if white nationalism is to succeed, you have to answer that Asian question or at least do something with these offsprings that are coming because they think multicultural and diversity is such a benefit when it's really creating, for lack of a better term, an Asian-Aryan race of people.
Yeah, I mean, I read somewhere that Kappas are one of the fastest-growing demographics in America.
It's a nice way of not converting or baying down to the destructive nature of the white feminist with blue hair. The American woman is so destroyed. It's not organic, and it's not...
They are arriving here too, the feminists.
And that's why I think...
I'm scared.
Here's the thing. I think white Americans know that European women are authentic, and so they'll go, and their ideal woman is some Russian woman or some Italian woman or some pure... That's always the dream in white America, is to have an authentic... But that's just running away from our pan-European American problem. It seems the more white people we get in, the more dysfunctional we'll be. It's pretty sad.
And even, like, political correctness, feminism, American consumerism, it's spreading to countries like Poland that, like, people would assume would be traditional.
I know, right?
I don't know. I think that the multiculturalism is something that's started with the good intention, but it's rapidly transforming into a monster.
Shinja, would you say you identify more with the alt-right or the alt-left?
Speaking of your politics point of view from the USA, you're talking. I could say I'm more lenient to the conservative side. So I could say I'm more alt-right.
And what's interesting about the alt-right is that it's sort of influenced by European nationalism or the European right more than American politics, because the American conservative movement, it's traditionally been a coalition of three groups. Basically, the neocons who want a hawkish policy in the Middle East, business interests who want like low taxes on the rich, deregulation of environmental regulations, and then you have like the religious right and like the southern evangelicals. So those have been the big three groups. But basically, the alt right, in a lot of ways, has more common with a lot of these European nationalist figures like Marine Le Pen.
I could say I can find pretty much the finite definition of my alignment, because I'm ignorant about it. But if I have to evaluate the things I know, I think I'm more lenient about the alt-right side of the thing. Just because I think that the alt-left, it's interesting in some aspects. But maybe it's because I discovered the alt-right movement through the Milo Yiannopoulos speeches.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not totally in agreement with everything he says, but I'm more prominent to the alt-right.
Yeah, I would associate too. I mean, I was on the alt-right even before it was called alt-right. I mean, I was reading Countercurrents and watching, reading, or listening to Voice of Reason when I was like 16 or 17, really young that age. And it just, it all of a sudden, within this year, the last 2 years, the name alternative right or alt-right has now became mainstream. And I feel like it does, it has succeeded in some way, and it is definitely a millennial culture. And it's something that's not going to leave me, especially this newfound interest in nationalism, racial awareness, things that everyone should know about. Yet at the same time, I think the alt-left, this little quirky little movement formed by Rabbit, Prince of Queens, you know, it's kind of just a left-wing faction of alt-right ideals, meaning that people don't think it's not genuinely like this Frankfurter, Verso Books, Chomskyite left we're talking about. It's more like a left-wing faction of the alt-right, or trying to make the left-wing better and just getting these red-pilled ideals and making a red-pilled left and destroying everything what the left once stood for. I mean, who are...
I like your new slogan on your new... You have a new website on... It's a Tumblr. It says, for people on the left-wing faction of the alt-right who have Asian girlfriends...
Well, I guess that's the best way you can describe it as, and it's certainly a culture I'm a part of. I mean, what are you going to do when they find out you are saying anti-Semitic remarks and it turns out your girlfriend's Asian? Are you going to go in the gas chamber too? And I have to think about there's some liberties to that. It's just like how Rabbit says...
But that's kind of... That's just different factions. I mean, everyone has their own... It's a Big Ten move. Like, everyone has their own...
Yeah.
The Asian women thing is not mandatory to be part of the left wing of the alt-right.
I know, right? That's what I'm saying. It's just almost a sub of a sub-genre. But I always feel that there's so many white male Asian females, it itself is a culture. You know, it's not like there's going to be white male Spanish female culture. The statistics show in all culture and in major cities, there is a huge white male Asian female artsy yuppie punk scene going on. It just has to be addressed. But
the thing is, those types of people you're talking about, they tend to be in the kind of a Swipple culture, but you're saying like you can convert them, they can be converted.
Yeah, I could take the new cuck behavior, the stuff white people like behavior, and just yellow pill or red pill them into Asianarians or something like that. That's what all white people are doing right now. They're red pilling their Trump supporters onto the far right, and I think I'm doing them a favor too by making them these right wing kind of people by telling them about Asianarianism, and I think it's working real well.
The other thing about Europe, and in Europe there's all this culture of a tradition of like historic architecture going way back. In America, there's this kind of notion that if you're a conservative, you have to, like, shop at Walmart, go to, like, a mega church, and, like, live in a tract housing development.
I'd love to see one of those mega church in real life. It's a so strange concept to me, a mega church. I can't wrap my mind about
it. We... are at the end of the show. Before I wrap things up, Shinja, is there anything else you'd like to add about your work and about your political ideas?
About my work, you can find my channel on YouTube. You can search for Shinja, S-H-I-N-J-A. And I'm also on Facebook, and I started the 2017 production today after the holiday season. And about my political viewpoint, I'm really, really, really interested about what's going to happen in your country with the Trump presidential term, because I'm really interested. I'm curious because it's been one of the funniest presidential election I have ever seen in my life. So I'm curious because you guys must know that everything that happens in America is bound to be felt here in Europe, especially in Italy too, because we are pretty much obsessed by the USA. So I'm really curious.
Well, I'm proud I voted for Trump, so I don't care what anybody has to say about that.
Huh.
What?
Yeah, especially in Pennsylvania, your vote counted.
Yep.
Shinja, it's been an excellent show. Thank you for being on.
Thank you so much for having me on. And as I said the last time, please, please, please forgive me for my horrible English.
That's okay.
I hope to see you guys soon.
Thanks, and also thanks, Pilliter.
Thanks, Shinja, for being on. Bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Ciao.